Chapter 7. Saturday, October 6th, and Monday, October 8th.
Addie. Saturday, 9:30 a.m. Ashton keeps asking me to think of something to do, but nothing interests me. I can't remember what I did before I started dating Jake 3 years ago. Finally, I tell her I used to like riding my bike, although it's years since I've ridden one. Ashton decides we'll go to the park and get a couple of those bikes you hire by the hour. Then, when I tell her she should be at home with Charlie, she says, "Charlie's very happy. I guess he's moved in with his girlfriend by now." This makes me forget how I feel. "I'm so sorry," I say. "Why didn't you say something?" "You had enough to worry about." "But it's your marriage." I feel sad for Ashton, but I don't like Charlie. Ashton's been married for a couple of years, but about a year ago, I noticed she never laughed when she was with Charlie. She tells me there have been problems in the marriage for a while, but she didn't feel brave enough till now to end it. She doesn't want to discuss it. Instead, she asks me the question I didn't answer before. "I know you didn't take those EpiPens, Addie. So why did you lie?" So I have to tell her that I went to get the painkillers for Jake because he had a headache. And I didn't want to say so in front of her, because she always said that Jake controlled me. And she's right. He did. And then I start to cry. And I cry and cry, with Ashton's arms wrapped around me. Finally, I stop. She gives me some tissues and says, "Come on, let's ride bikes." I'm surprised how great it feels. We go to a cafe in the park afterward, and when I look at my phone, there's a message from Cooper asking me if I'm going to Olivia's party tonight. People haven't been as horrible as I expected, because Cooper's still been friendly to me. But I don't think anyone really cares about me. It's Jake they like. "I'm not invited," I text back. "Have fun." I feel a bit sad about missing the party. But then I realize something. If I'd been with Jake, he would have made me wear what he wanted to see me wearing. And if we'd gone, he would have decided when to arrive and when to leave. I'm not missing being controlled. Bronwyn, 10:30 a.m. I go for a run and feel better for it, and then go to the library to collect Maeve. I can't find her and have to text her. She replies immediately. Fourth floor, children's section. She's sitting on a little chair in front of a computer, and I sit on the floor beside her. "I'm on the admin screen for about that," she whispers. It takes me a second to understand her. "Someone will find out," I whisper. "Anyone can use these public computers, but you need your own library number to use them." "I'm not using my number," she says. "I'm using his." She points to a small boy sitting with a pile of picture books. His card was lying on the table, and I copy the number. The boy's mother is smiling at my sweet-looking sister, who's stolen her son's library number. I can't think of anything to say except, "Why?" "I wanted to see what the police are seeing," Maeve says. "And I wanted to know if there are any other posts that haven't been published. Then we'll know if there are other people who had reasons to kill Simon." "Are there any other posts?" I ask. "No, but there's something strange. The post about Cooper has a later date than the posts about the rest of you, for the night before Simon died. There's an earlier file with his name on it, but I can't open it. I'm going to download it so I can take it away and hack into it. When did my little sister turn into a hacker and detective? She tells me more. She knew how to find the admin screen and the site Simon was visiting because she saw him at the library a few weeks back and checked the computer he was using after he left. And Simon was reading some really weird and horrible stuff online. Maeve, I say, is this because of what happened freshman year? Her eyes go hard. No, she answers. I just wanted him to stop what he was doing to the whole school. And I guess he stopped. After we leave the library, we go to where there are some half-built houses. I collect the phone that Nate has left in one of the mailboxes. And he's left me a photo of Stan the Lizard, too.
Cooper, 9:20 p.m. A lot of people are already drunk by the time I get to Olivia's party. Keely and Olivia are having a deep conversation. Vanessa is trying to get Nate to notice her. I find Jake outside with Luis, who goes off straight away to get some drinks. Jake is very drunk. "Hi, killer," he says, laughing. "Are you tired of murder jokes yet? Because I'm not." Jake doesn't usually get as drunk as this, but I guess he's had a bad week too. I don't really want to talk to him, but I decide to try. "It's been a bad few days, hasn't it?" I say. "If you think you've had a bad week, Cooper, you should try mine," he says angrily. "Are you mad at me for something, Jake?" "Why would I be mad at you? You're only still friends with my ex-girlfriend, aren't you?" "Jake, I know Addie made a stupid mistake. Everybody knows it." "Cheating isn't a mistake. It's something you choose to do," he says, sounding even more mad. Then he starts talking about how his mom cheated on his dad when he was in junior high and how it ruined the whole family. "But they're still together," I say. "Right?" "Yeah, they're together, but it's never been the same." Olivia is with Luis when he comes back with the beer, while I'm thinking how stupid I was to ask Addie if she was coming. Jake takes one and raises it as if he's saying cheers. "To Simon," he says. "What a great guy." Olivia gives me her phone, saying that there's a report about Simon on a local news website. They've published photos of the four of us and the About That posts that Simon wrote about us.
Nate, Monday, 2:50 p.m. There are reporters and news vans outside school when I get there. Chad Posner finds me at the end of the day and tells me that lots of students are giving interviews. "What the reporters really want," he says, "is to talk to you and the others. Maybe you should leave the back way." Bronwyn and I have been avoiding each other at school because her lawyer told her to do that, but I guess she'll hate this. I find her with Maeve near her locker, looking like she's going to be sick, but also looking great in her short dress and boots. They're talking about Bronwyn hiding in the back of Maeve's car as they leave. "Come with me," I say. "I'm taking my bike out the back way. I'll take you to the mall, and Maeve can meet you later." Bronwyn looks much happier as Maeve says, "That'll work. I'll find you in half an hour." We get on the bike. Bronwyn puts her arms around me too tightly, but I don't mind. We ride along back roads for a couple of miles, and then I park the bike in a corner of the parking lot at the mall, a long way from the entrance. When she gets off the bike, I notice that her hair smells like green apples, and that she's almost the same height as me. We're close to each other, and my heart is jumping. Then, a van with screaming kids in it parks next to us, and Bronwyn starts walking to the entrance. Things don't go so well while we're waiting for Maeve. Bronwyn tells me she's worried that I don't have a lawyer, and tells me about a law firm called Until Proven. Their lawyers take cases for people who can't afford to pay them. She wants to call them about me, and I get mad. I don't need your help, I say, probably sounding angrier than I actually am. But I do mean it. I don't want Bronwyn Rojas controlling my life for me. I get up and walk away. I'm almost outside when someone touches my jacket. When I turn, arms wrap around my neck, and I can smell green apples as Bronwyn kisses my cheek. "You're right," she whispers. "I'm sorry. It's not my business. Don't be mad, okay? I can't get through this if you stop talking to me." "I'm not mad," I manage to say. But I don't move quick enough to hug her before she runs off.